X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
Hello, everyone, and thank you again for joining me for another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the producer and host of this show. And a heartfelt thank you to all of you who have taken the time to listen in each week on the Para X Radio Network or on Podomatic. I have certainly appreciated your interest in learning more about the paranormal and the supernatural occurrences that happen in our world. Your time and interest in this show has not only kept me in a top-rated ranked position on Podomatic, but has given me the opportunity to talk about the paranormal from an educational viewpoint while entertaining and intriguing you about the real or perceived claims that people encounter. Some of you have asked me where you can find the archives of my shows, and the primary location is Podomatic. Here is how you go about finding those archives. First, if you are listening in on the Para-X Radio Network, go to the Show Archives link located at the top of the page, click on it, scroll down, click on Paranormal Encounters Podcast Series link. This brings you directly into Podomatic. On the right-hand side, you can subscribe for free, where you will be notified each time I upload a new segment. If you are already in Podomatic, download as usual. Finally, if you like to read books, check out my 7 books I have on Amazon, Kindle, and Barnes & Noble. Their book covers and descriptions can be viewed at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com. Okay then, let's find out what is on the agenda for this episode. In segment 1, Paranormal Topics, I will discuss a general topic. The topic for this week will be psychokinesis. Segment 2, Beyond the Grave, will be narrated by a voice talent who will share with you an interesting story about some of my ghostly encounters, pondering if what happened to me was initiated by myself or by something else. Segment 3, Ghosts in the News, will report an interesting news story about a ghostly sighting to enlighten even the most skeptical ghost disbeliever. Segment 4, very popular segment called Maynard and Mildred. Maynard continues and always will be picked on Mildred, his ghost friend. And finally for this week, if you would like to share your story or be a guest on this program, please write me at krschutz1@yahoo.com. That's krschutz1@yahoo.com. Okay, let's begin with the first segment. The segment is called Paranormal Topics. The topic for this week will be psychokinesis. This is the educational portion of the podcast. Research states the definition of psychokinesis is the supposed ability to move objects by mental effort alone. It has also been reported that psychokinesis experiments have been criticized for their lack of proper controls, showing no convincing evidence that it is a real phenomenon. Studies about this theory or phenomenon date back as far as 1934, when a young gambler seemed to have a lot of luck when gambling. The gambler claimed he sometimes was able to exercise mind over matter when throwing dice in games. By 1987, a number of experiments had been conducted throwing dice to eliminate error or bias while discovering a large ratio against the chance of occurrence. This experimentation moved into the direction of researchers conducting studies designed to determine whether human intention affected the movement of objects. In one such study, subjects were asked to concentrate on shifting the distribution of balls from the left or right. Results indicated beyond chance expectation. In China, researchers tested subjects who underwent ESP trials, found inconsistencies, both plausible and inconclusive. Their same trials were also conducted in California. Same results, inconclusive. The most extensive research was on metal bending conducted by John Hasted from the University of London's Birkbeck College. Although his subjects were mostly adolescents, mixed reactions from PSI researchers concluded it was impossible to distinguish basic physical characteristics with those correlated with the subject. So metal bending requires non-touching. Some studies allowed touching, which in a few cases merited with scientific consideration. According to research, a number of other studies were also suggested of the possibility that the conscious intention could influence the growth and movement of biological targets. For example, water fleas were observed under a microscope and turned in randomly selected directions just by mental intention alone. Significant results were obtained in mental directing of ants to carry away matches on the selected side of a wooden slide. Another research conducted a study on bacterial growth and how it was psychokinetically accelerated and retarded, which means slowed down, according to the intentions of the subjects. In September of 2006, a survey about the belief in various religious and paranormal topics polled 1,721 Americans about their beliefs in telekinesis, which is the mind-moving objects. Results indicated that 28% of male participants and 31% of female participants agreed or strongly agreed with the statement that it was possible to influence the world through the mind alone. Throughout history and in the research of this phenomenon, there have been claimants that allege their ability to move objects was a real deal. Okay, so here are some of the reported examples. Angelique Cotton, known as the Electric Girl, claimed that she could move pieces of furniture and scissors across the room. Spectators attempted to discredit her claims by suggesting fraud, a case of double movement in the direction of the object being thrown with rapid motion. An Italian spiritualist medium alleged she could cause objects to move during seances. However, she was caught levitating a table with her foot by a magician and used tricks to move objects. Let's go back to 1909. A Polish medium also claimed to move objects by use of her mind, floating a pair of scissors in between her hands. Scientists suspected the medium used a fine thread of hair running between her hands to lift the suspended object into the air. This was confirmed when some participants observed the thread. Let's look at Anne Marie Shiberry, a 19-year-old secretary who said she had telekinetic powers but was eventually debunked by her use of trickery. And of course, there's Swami Rama, a yogi skilled individual who controlled his heart functions, demonstrated the movement of a knitting needle twice the distance from his feet, with the observer attempting to debunk his skill by suggesting air movement was somehow the cause of this needle moving twice as far from his feet. There appears to be a broad scientific consensus that psychokinesis does not produce reliable, repeatable demonstrations. Despite its 130-year-old scientific record of studies, it is difficult to prove the justification that the phenomena of extrasensory perception, mental telepathy, and mind over matter is convincing enough to suggest the phenomena actually exists. Let's look at another experiment in 1984 by the United States National Academy of Sciences. a request to see if the use of psychokinesis, whether subjects could remotely jam or disrupt enemy weaponry. Published results indicated there was no scientific evidence for the existence of psychokinesis. Other researchers who have studied this phenomenon seem to agree that if it was validated enough, we would see all kinds of occurrences in our daily lives, especially the use when we are in and tampering with casino machines, okay? In this study, in the casino games particularly, the laws of chance appear to be operating as they are intended, which means the favor always goes with the casino, not with the individual. And if the individual were to win at a game, it was merely luck or chance and not necessarily anything more. And I can jump in and agree with this because I used to work in a casino. And I became fully aware as to how the casino games were put into their favor. Okay, it's not that they're rigged. It's just that the chances in many of these skilled games or these games actually do not favor the individual. I can talk about slot machines, for example. Slot machines, each one has a percentage that will pay out to whoever's sitting at it and playing it that evening or for the week. And back in the day, I saw those percentages. And they are all these machines have computerized discs in them. And after so many spins or whatnot or whatever, they will go off and they will give you something back, or you will win a jackpot or whatever the case may be. So it's all computerized. It's impossible to stop a wheel with your mind. The wheel would have stopped anyway. Let's look at this from a physicist perspective. Sean Carroll, who has written books about spoons, states that like all matter, they are made up of atoms, and that any movement of a spoon with the mind would involve the manipulation of those atoms through four forces of nature: strong nuclear force, weak nuclear force, electromagnetism, and gravitation. In order for a spoon to bend, one of these forces must be present. Otherwise, this leaves no physical force that could possibly account for psychokinesis. Physicist Robert Park points out that if the mind could influence matter, it would be easy for parapsychologists to measure using the alleged psychokinetic power to deflect microbalance. Whatever that might mean, don't ask me what that means. Now let's look at this from a cognitive bias research, suggesting people are susceptible to illusions of psychokinesis. This includes both the illusion that they themselves have the power and that the events they witness are real demonstrations of psychokinesis. For example, believers in the paranormal have been shown to be more susceptible to illusion than others. I find that statement to be a little bit interesting, because I'm trying to pinpoint the basis of why they think people who believe in the paranormal are more susceptible to illusions. It's not like when I walk into a room and I have an experience, it's not like I was seeking anything, or that all of a sudden it just occurred because I thought about something in my head or I wanted to see something there. Many cases for me occur without my even looking for them. They come to me, things happen, things show themselves to me. It happens. I have learned that I have a high frequency. I have learned that I am probably a little bit more sensitive in that department than most individuals. I have learned that my brain has been probably wired a little bit differently. I find it interesting for children. Children don't look for these things, but yet they also report these things. Is that an illusion in their mind? Do they wake up in the middle of the night and do they ask, oh my God, I hope I see a man standing in my corner of my room. No, they do not. They report it, though, because they see it and they believe to see it. It's not something at a very young age that they drum up, not all the time. So the thing is, I find that statement to be very interesting. More susceptible to illusion, I have to say, not in my case and not in many other cases, but it could be in some cases. Okay. In 1995, Wiseman and Morris showed subjects an unedited videotape of a magician's performance in which a fork that was bent eventually broke. Believers in the paranormal were significantly more influenced and likely to misinterpret the tape as a demonstration and that they were more likely to remember details of the presentation. This affects what is called a confirmation bias. If people want to believe, they will find ways to believe. Here's a simple example as stated in the research. If subjects watched a basketball player taking a series of free throws and visualize him making these shots, they feel their thoughts actually contributed to his ability to successfully make the shot. Okay, once again, mind over matter, hoping that he'll make the shot, put the minds together, send the message out there through your mind, make the shot, he makes the shot. Okay, so then they probably believe in their minds that they helped him to make that shot. Finally, let's look at magicians and special effects. According to research, magicians have successfully simulated some of their specialized abilities, such as object movement, spoon bending, levitation, and teleportation. Mental objects such as keys or cutlery can be bent using a number of different techniques, even if the performer had no access to them beforehand. As an example, Richard Wiseman states a number of ways of faking psychokinetic metal bending. Some of the ways is to switch the object for a pre-bent duplicate. Now that is probably very true. And I think that it's fascinating when you watch a magician. And I just think it's very fascinating how the mind works when you watch a magician. Because when this stuff happens, your brain can't always, can't always pick up all the details at one particular time. You think you can. You think you're watching, but not necessarily. So I find that very interesting myself, actually. Research has also suggested that psychokinetic effects can also be created by use of verbal suggestion. Such is the example of a key. If the performer is really convincing, the act of verbal suggestion and stating, "Look, the key is still bending," can fool an inquisitive audience. Those who believe in the paranormal, according to a 2014 study, appeared to believe the key continued to bend versus non-believers. Now, that's interesting. I would like to switch gears here and pick out a few for discussion and compare what may have been paranormal or psychokinesis using my own experiences to gauge some of this dialogue from the research. Here are only some of my own direct observations and unexpected experiences I have seen or experienced over the past 10 years. I have always stated on my podcast that I feel I do not have a strong enough mind to actually move things. However, there are times when I begin to wonder if some of my occurrences that I've experienced around me were not due to my emission of energy from my own body, creating my own poltergeist activity. Let me explain some of this. So I've witnessed and been part of the movement of things, including the levitating of my own body while sleeping. Okay, so I woke up being tossed up into the air. Did I do that myself? No. Was there something under the bed to kick me under up into the air? Not any gizmo, I'll tell you that right now. Was I levitating when I woke up in the air and found myself bouncing on the bed? Yes, I did. I did. And I was sleeping in a sound sleep at the time, too. By the way, what provoked that was an angry ghost under the bed who liked to hang out under there, which I did not know about at the time. And I snore very, very loud when I'm really, really tired. And I'm laying on a flat pillow. And so what happened was it got sick of listening to me snore, wanted to shut me up, put its foot apparently underneath my back, shoved me up. I was airborne about, I would say I was probably 6 to a foot up in the air, but I found myself waking up when I was bouncing on the bed. Okay, so once again, I'm fully aware I have a very high frequency mind, which seems to attract ghostly or unexplained activity around me. I'm also fully aware that my brain may be a little bit hardwired differently than others, and maybe we all have the capability to emit strong energy from our bodies, but we simply are unaware of how our emotions and energies within us create this poltergeist activity. Now, I'm going to tell you, I haven't been flying up in the air since, and that was a known haunted hotel, but I wasn't necessarily in the most haunted room. But I would give it an award for being one of the most spectacular occurrences that I've ever had, I'll tell you that. However, one must also question, if we are emitting energy from our own bodies as unseen forces to react within our homes or places, then how does this equate to our visiting other places and, most importantly, having movement of objects occur while away for extended periods of time? I'm not that good, okay? So if we are eventually emitting a poltergeist from ourselves, then what happens to this energy when we eventually calm down, not emitting highly charged emotions into our environment? What happens to this? I joked with someone the other day. I said, if I had the ability to create this much energy where it actually created a ghost from my body, give me the opportunity to at least let me name this thing before it creates havoc in my home. So this leads to one more question. If we know that negative energy feeds unseen forces existing around us, then what do happy emotions emit? I mean, after all, a happy emotion has just as much energy as a negative emotion, but the difference here is that when it's really negative, I suppose there's a lot more force or seriousness behind it, where when you're happy, you're releasing different kinds of tensions. Do they also carry with them a strong emotion? I don't know. I have been a strong believer in the paranormal since a very early age. My wish at a young age was to see and experience a ghost. Well, I did. And I have experienced one by photograph, two of them by photograph, which came to me. I experienced one zipping down a hallway very quickly and not holding its image for very, very long. And then I've experienced that the disembodied and those that I cannot see. As an empath, which is someone who's highly sensitive at a young age, I could sense events and outcomes faster than the normal individual. I have been told I've got a very fast thinking mind. I wouldn't always say that that's the case in all situations, but my head thinks very logically, quickly, and fast, and almost goes into the can see an outcome faster than most people can think through one. I've always been told that my mind thinks so quickly that it's also hard to slow down. I don't know if this has anything to do with the energy that I have within me or what I might emit around me, but I do find myself more or less a study sometimes, and would like to learn more about myself that way. My internal voice tells me what I see, interpret, feel, and for those I've tried to convince about events that are foreseen, usually met with disregard. That is until the event occurs, and basically in so many words I say, I told you so. Or do I simply have better judgment? I know my internal voice speaks to me constantly. There have been times when words come flying out of my mouth and I have no idea who or what provoked them. I also know that I can say things sometimes and all of a sudden it's either repeated on something unusual, it's repeated on the television. Most recently, I was out visiting my father's grave and I had my ghost device with me where I talk through it or to it to see if there's any energy around me. And to my astonishment and confusion, once again, it appeared I was actually having some kind of conversation with something, because it knew things that only I were aware of at the time. I'll give you an example so I'm not teasing you. So I was driving to the cemetery and I was running low on gasoline, okay? And I said to myself, oh, just remember when I leave here to not forget to stop and get gasoline, you know, so I don't run out on the highway. And so I was talking, my father had passed away in December, and some people say when, you know, they're not at the graveyards anymore or whatever, but something was around me. And so I was just nonchalantly turned on my device, and it was in the middle of the afternoon, so it's not like, you know, I could see anything or sense anything, you know, at that time. And I turned it on, and one of the first words that came out of it was gasoline. Okay, now that's a little bizarre if you ask me, because, first of all, I've never gotten that word ever from my device ever before. So I'm sitting there thinking to myself, where did this come from? Did this come from me and my mental thoughts, because I had just thought about it, you know, just, you know, minutes prior? Or did something alert me to the fact that they knew that I had on my conscious mind, you know, that I needed to get gasoline? Or was something hitching a ride in my car that I didn't know about and wanted to remind me? It was just very bizarre. So then I was standing over, of course, my dad's grave, and I said, well, if you're here right now and you're the one who brought this to me, can you tell me what was one of the last things we did before, you know, you got really sick and we couldn't do anything anymore? And so it was like a test. And the word came out, dinner. Well, that is correct. That was the last thing that we ended up doing before, you know, the last time that I had seen him, you know, able, all right? I thought, okay, that was an easy one. And by the way, dinner had not ever come out of my device before either. So I'm sitting here kind of, my mind's rolling. I'm looking around. I'm trying to see if anything is, you know, out of the unordinary. And, of course, then I asked another question, which I'm not going to share on the radio here. But let's just say, it was too coincidentally odd, all right? And once again, do I have that type of ability to create this with my own mind? I don't really know. I'm not really sure. Or do I have something hanging on me all the time? I don't really know. Or was I really talking to my dad and he was there? I don't really know. I don't know. One of my most compelling experiences with the paranormal happened at Litchfield Plantation. This is, oh boy, I don't want to get it wrong because it's been a long time. I think it was one of the Carolinas. Publicly known as a haunted property. This right here screams out a red flag, because when I went onto this property, I was already fearful of what I might experience. And of course, we know fear elicits a strong emotion, and a strong emotion is what negative forces or sensitive forces seem to feed off of. At the haunted property, Litchfield Plantation, I never felt threatened by anything negative. However, with the factors of a stream outside our villa, full moon evening, and traumatic history on that property, that alone was a recipe for a few hanging around. And yes, a lot of activity was experienced in a place where I didn't think any experience would occur at all. And there was a lot of experience in that villa that night. Fueled by nervousness and fear, the most compelling observations here involved unexplained sounds in our bathroom, like my makeup pencil being dropped on the floor and rolling, but nothing had ever been moved, okay? Footsteps heard with no one around, our inability to open our bedroom door from either side, and also, of course, watching a spark fly out of the television set while we were lying in bed and then shutting off. Now, back in the day, certain televisions, when they snapped off from an electrical charge or something, would indicate something differently. But in this particular case, my husband was just mocking this ghost in this room, not realizing that there was a ghost in this room. And because of that, it wanted to teach him a lesson, which startled him. For myself, I knew it probably was what he was taunting, and I made him apologize to the ghost. Okay? The feeling of a heaviness in the air. Yes, I felt that in that room, by the way. I also felt sick. Okay? Along with my feeling ill and tired, were masked by my husband mocking the unseen, causing more activity that included the movement of a rubber ducky in the sunroom from one side to the other and discovered the next day. Okay? Now, does my mind or his mind have the ability to do that? I don't think so. And back then I had no idea that we could possibly elicit any type of energy from our body to actually cause this. The Groveland Hotel. This one is in just outside of Yosemite Park, California. Once again, the initial disappointment of our not staying in that one haunted room. But then, of course, as I told you earlier, about 2:30 a.m., very full moon night, very clear night, I would find myself being kicked up in the air due to my snoring. And, of course, after reading the journal on that one, realized that we were not alone. I did not read that journal until the next day, so there you have it. Other experiences had happened in that room. In one of our former homes, seeing a spoon spin around in a small ice cream cup, fast and uncontrollable. My husband witnessing his bottle cap from his water bottle exploding off of it, even though it had been, half open, but yet twist and poof, explode. Another thing, wall plaque in our master bedroom hung at an angle. You know how you see that on the some of these haunted shows or even these cartoons? You see the pictures all hanging at an angle in the stairway. That's what it looked like. Okay. Tapping on the cupboard door. Sound of a glass dropping behind my head on the glass sofa table. Let's see, my favorite fixture being shoved off of the island after I knew very well once I turned my back that it would be pushed off the island and breaking onto the floor. One in our bedroom here, I would say at this house, we had a light bulb explode, but yet the energy buildup during that time from myself could have possibly made that light bulb explode. But I do know that the haunting across the road with the deceased children, I do know they like to hang out in this room once in a while too. So it's possible that, coupled with my own frustrated energy at the time, could have exploded the light bulb. So was it me causing all of these events? Then how is it that when I was 600 miles away that the bottle cap exploded off my husband's water bottle? This was just, what, through the telephone line? Was my energy so strong that I could literally cause an object to move just by talking about it or talking with him over a landline phone? I'm not sure. While we lived in that house, we both endured a lot of stress, and it was there's a lot of anxiety going on at all times. I could understand the buildup of our energies into that environment over time, just like a capsule holding it, and it just bump, 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 and then finally things started happening. My not feeling well, heightened by emotional sensitivities, may have continued to fuel the fire. However, does this explain my being choked in the middle of the night? Now, why would I want to choke myself in the middle of the night, okay? I firmly believe, because I have had discussions using my speaking device on that bed in that area where I was also choked. I do not know if there was a portal underneath that room. I do not know who was hanging around in that house. I do know there was a portal underneath our coffee table bringing in ABCD or my bringing home, because when we went to places, I was always going to haunted places. Maybe I brought a few bad ones back with me. I don't know. What else can I talk to you about? Let's see. Yes, I was telling you about my having a conversation with this entity once when I was in our back master bedroom. I was actually, and it was in need of some space, so I was putting together some artwork that I have in an art gallery up in Chicago. And one of the things is as I was putting this stuff together over my speaking device, the words were coming out, artwork, you know, interesting, you know, words like that. And it's like, how would anything know what I was doing? And so I found that interesting. I mean, I'm not sitting there thinking in the back of my head, okay, right now let me say artwork in my head and let it come through my speaking device. It would be more coincidental that something else would be speaking to me and telling me what I was doing. Very interesting. I also had put an alarm over that bed because something just felt and told me that something liked to hang out in the middle of our bed. And the alarm would sound every time I pointed it in that direction. Same place I got choked, same place I was talking to me when I was doing my artwork. Very, very coincidental. And of course, the bathroom was right next door. And a lot of times, a lot of these ghost entities will like to hang out in your bathroom, in your closets, in your wardrobes, because they're nice, dark, quiet places. Now let's turn to our next house. Clock dials moving about 3 to 6 hours, indicating a presence that something had tampered with it. This included, by the way, a fresh battery. How about the key that was turned in our door once? I always kept looking at that key, and I kept looking at the clock, and I looked at the key. And it's very interesting because one day the key was actually turned as if it was leaving and it wanted to just, you know, lock the door, you know, for safety measure. And I thought to myself, okay, my husband didn't touch the door. I didn't touch the door. How did the key turn on its own? Very interesting. What else did I find? Oh, yes, my purse, crossbody purse, which I had on a shelf next to my computer, went downstairs to get something, came back upstairs, it was gone. Couldn't figure out in a million years where on earth it went to. Husband and I went exploring. He found it underneath my chair. I had something like a big cloth on my chair because, you know, when they get kind of ratty, you want to put something on it. Anyway, it was hidden under there, but the strap was out just enough to be noticed, and he found it directly under my chair. Okay, I cannot say that I'm that good, you know, to be able to do that. And then when we left and went on vacation and came home, my clock dials were turned again. And that's usually an indication that there had been a presence. And it's usually an indication of, like, hello, I was here or whatnot. I don't know. I can't tell you. Can't tell you. Of course, my favorite and the most shocking ever was the mirror cycling around in front of me in that haunted bed and breakfast I stayed in Wales. And I do not have that much, you know, mind ability. But I will tell you, as being the second most haunted room in that place, which, by the way, it was, how that mirror, it started swinging around when my husband and I were doing a protection prayer and he was throwing holy water, and I was actually looking right at the mirror at the time. And I will tell you, that thing shot around like 1.5 rotations, something like that. I will never forget that. It actually traumatized me. And so, you know, I kept looking at that mirror, though, and the room had 4 mirrors in it the way it was. So, and I did capture some pretty real orbs in that room, and there were handprints on my pillow, and the wardrobe was open the next day, and there's all kinds of things, but the room felt really heavy, and I felt really sick, and I couldn't sleep all night. It was horrible. Anyway, did my mind open up you know, cycle that mirror and open up the door and all this. I don't think so. This was a haunted property that had reported 12 different ghosts of different ages being seen in it. And so I already knew this going into it, but the thing is, I had no idea that one or more would actually come to me. I did see that one walking very quickly down the hallway, and I did walk through a very heavy magnetic field walking down the hallway. So my energy? I don't think so. Let's see. So how do we explain all of these occurrences? I don't know. I think there is the possibility that if you have a lot of energy penned up inside of you and you're contained in a certain place for a period of time, I do think it is possible to expel energy out into your environment. I really, really do. However, in my case, which I'm trying to study myself sometimes here, I'm not sure if maybe I didn't have an occasional moment where I caused the situation, but in other cases I can't say that it came from me. Sorry. So, what do we see here? Triggering of events. With my having such a high frequency and hearing reports that some people cannot even wear watches without them going dead, I believe it is true that some of our bodies can affect objects around us. I believe it. I 100%. You hear reports of things flying across the room, being lost and then found. You hear reports of cupboard doors being opened, pens in barns open, but yet the cattle remaining in the pens. There's that one I talked about on my last show, which was the murder situation in Case with Deb. You hear of things all the time of stuff, but you know, do we live in a dimensional world where one moment we are hallucinating or seeing an illusion? Or are we really causing a lot of this ourselves? I don't know. I'm not really quite sure. Which brings us back to what this episode is all about. Our ability to move objects with our minds. Does this include our being able to do so when we're on vacation and you come home and you find things moved in your home? Or is this an indicator of a presence? Is it an indicator of your own presence? Or was it just, once again, something that you had forgotten about and your mind had kind of gone off into la-la land, and then you convinced yourself that something had actually been moved? In many of my situations, I focused on these items a lot. And then all of a sudden, I found themselves interacting with me. So, of course, that puzzles me because I often wonder if I had something to do with that, okay? But then in some cases, I didn't have anything to do with them, and they just basically acted in front of me. Something to think about. I want you to think about this the next time you get angry, mad, excited about something, but not just on a regular basis. If you're mad and you have a lot of energy that you're expelling on a regular basis, the question then becomes, where does that energy go? And where does it pen itself up in? Is it being emitted and, you know, like if you're near walls, is it being sucked into a wall and emitted out during certain periods of time? Where exactly does that energy go? And if I am producing a poltergeist from my own body, at least let me have the opportunity to name myself. But on the other hand, that is a little bit scary to me, because when things calm down, what happened to that energy of that poltergeist? Something to think about, everyone. Something to think about. Here ends this segment for this episode. Thank you. Let's take a break. When we return, we will move into segment 2, otherwise known as Beyond the Grave. This segment will be narrated by a voice talent who will share with you an interesting story about some of my ghostly encounters, pondering if what happened to me was initiated by myself or by something else. Stay tuned. Beyond the Grave. Power of mind or merely a poltergeist coincidence? You have heard the phrase, be careful of the power of your mind. Use your mind to visualize a positive future. Allow your mind to direct your life. Do not allow others to destroy it for you. Words to live by. I was told at a very young age by a psychic to be careful about the negative thoughts I may have had toward others, as my mind was apparently very active and also very powerful. I had no idea what my psychic was talking about then, but I do now. It was until one day when I had heard horrific news that my ex-friend's husband was killed in a tragic accident. Being very angry at her during most of my childhood years in school, this festering drove me crazy, and I always wondered how she would potentially get hers in the end. In this case, though, seemed to be an unexpected reality. After all, I was mad at her. I wasn't that hateful. I prayed for everlasting forgiveness, taking blame for what may have been a mere coincidence. I began thinking about the power of my mind. Did my mind festering with anger have anything to do with her loss? Or was it possible that my directed anger at her went out into the universe and was obliged by a negative force? Although I stopped wishing for bad stuff to happen to those around me who continually hurt me, that honor reversed once again when I was deceived by an ex-boyfriend who betrayed me so badly that I could not hold back my feelings of hate toward him. Reopening my vault of anger I stored away in my mind, in a job-related accident, his arm was accidentally cut off. It was at this point that I knew these two incidences may not have been coincidences after all, but rather a series of events that occurred due to my festering, angry mind. So back to my psychic I went to get answers about what was going on with me and to learn more about the power of my mind. Reassured that these incidences were coincidental and had nothing to do with my mind, I quietly disagreed. The mind can be a very powerful tool of destruction, and it was my responsibility to hold back, no matter how rude and demeaning my enemies were toward me. God supposedly gives us free will to learn from our mistakes, grow and understand people, be ridiculed and hurt by others, and love unconditionally. However, is there such a thing as having a powerful mind? And if the answer to this is yes, then why have I observed more negative events occurring than positive ones? Can unhappy collective minds block the happiness of those around them? Let's move this into the power of our minds to move objects and create poltergeist activity. I seem to attract a lot of it to me, though I have yet to look at something and watch it fly across the room in front of me. With the many experiences I have had in my life that may have involved what seems to be paranormal, why is it that I am now starting to question whether my connection between my mind and my high frequency are factors in the possible creation of paranormal activity. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being highly charged, where would you rank your mind's ability to affect the lives of others, and where does your frequency fall? Let's take a break. When we return, we will move into segment 3 of the podcast known as Ghosts in the News. This segment will be reported by a voice talent who will share with us an interesting ghost sighting witnessed by everyday people around the globe. Stay tuned. Welcome, everyone, to segment 3 called Ghosts in the News. What ghostly ghouls are lurking in your area? In a news article reported in Mirror News entitled Ghostly Figure of Servant Girl Who Died in 18th Century Fire, filmed in chilling footage, dated July 2017, brings us to the Tryon Palace in North Carolina, where Danielle Hyde, tourist, unintentionally videotaped what appears to be the apparition of a young girl wearing a long dress and a bonnet, carrying a basket down a hallway in an alleged haunted building. It is believed the see-through spirit of the young girl was a servant who died in the 18th century fire at the palace in 1798, which began in the cellar and engulfed much of the building. Danielle states she didn't think much of it since she has had ghostly occurrences happen to her before, such as hearing footsteps or seeing paintings fall off of walls. She and her friend went down into the cellar of the palace and reported that it had been freezing. And that is our ghostly moment in the news. Let's take a break. When we return, we will move into segment 4 entitled Maynard and Mildred. Stay tuned.
Hello, Maynard. What's the matter? Haven't seen a ghost today? Maynard, science can't explain everything. Maynard, just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Oh boy, I am signed up to participate in the hot dog eating contest.
Hello, Maynard.
Holy crap, Mildred. I don't have time to chat right now because I'm about to be called to take my seat in the hot dog eating contest.
I had no idea you liked to eat hot dogs so much, Maynard.
Yes, Mildred, I like hot dogs, and my goal is to go for the world record. I'm going to be a hot dog eating celebrity.
Celebrity? Wow. What's the record?
I don't know, but I'm going to be famous later today. I'm planning to eat about 100 hot dogs in 10 minutes.
Sounds to me like a huge stomach ache, Maynard. Maynard, maybe people should just stand back as you gobble them down.
Gobble snobble. I have a plan and special technique. I'm going to show people what a champion hot dog winner looks like.
What a dreamer. What will you get for the grand prize, Maynard?
I think free hot dogs for an entire year. And a trophy.
Oh, goody.
Mildred, stop bothering me. I need to get ready. Wait, did you just call my name, sir? Yes, that's my name. Maynard. Also known as Maynard the Muncher. That's my stage name, Mildred.
The Muncher? What kind of a name is that?
Mildred, it's better than Wally the Inhaler. He has been my biggest competition.
But this is your first year, Maynard. Maynard, the man is signaling for you to take your place.
I can hardly wait. I just love hot dogs.
I'll be cheering you on, Maynard.
Here I go. The man is saying, on your mark, get set, go.
Eat, Maynard! Eat! Eat! Way to dip that bun! Need any ketchup to help slide it down better?
No, stop interrupting me! Blah, 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 blah!
What did you say, Maynard? More ketchup? I can hardly understand you! Hurry! Your opponents are catching up to you!
Ugh! Oh my! Stop distracting me and give me a hand! Give me another hot dog! This one's crunchy! Give me a less crunchy one!
Maynard, you're looking a little pale. Are you feeling okay?
Holy crap! I feel sick! I don't want to see another hot dog as long as I live!
The judge is about to announce the winner! The judge says... The winner is Wally the Inhaler. How many? 63 hot dogs! How many did you eat, Maynard?
I shoved down 3.
You look terrible. Stand back, everyone! He's going to blow!
Burp! I feel better now.
Whew! I think I'm going to take off, Maynard. Have fun digesting your hot dogs. Sorry you didn't win the contest. And maybe next time, you'll eat a few more so you can take home the grand prize for last place. Next time, let's meet in your classroom at school for show and tell. Okay, Maynard?
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books, searching under Paranormal Encounters. Thanks for listening. Take care, and until next time.
Be careful what you wish for.
The script, vocal talent, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, or Para-X Radio Network. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, Para-X Radio Network, or its sponsors. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.